afternoon. If you're tuning in, my name is Aaron Barnett, and this is Coastal Cafe here on KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. Today we're going to be talking with Pippa Kahn from the Marine Stewardship Council. If you're not familiar with our show, Coastal Cafe is a joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the College of the Environment, University of Washington, and KPTZ 91.9 FM. Coastal Cafe explores the latest in marine science with researchers, policy experts, and people who live and work along our coast. And first of all, I'd like to welcome Pippa to our show.
Thanks for having me, Aaron.
So I understand you just spent some time in Morocco.
I did. So I was over there for work. Did a workshop on our kilotrophic level, basically small pelagic fisheries for a sardine fishery over there.
Well, fantastic. Well, that leads me to my first question, which is, I was wondering if you can give us some background on the Marine Stewardship Council, what it does, and if you could point out some of the products that we find even in our local stores that have the MSC label on it.
Yeah, okay. So the Marine Stewardship Council, we also go by MSC. We certify fisheries as sustainable. So when I say that, we maintain a fishery standard and a chain of custody standard that fisheries will be assessed against to then get an eco label that's put on their product. So we started in the late 90s. It was actually a coming together of Unilever and WWF when they kind of saw the writing on the wall that stocks, you know, were starting to decline, and we really needed to be thinking about how do we look at conservation and sustainability in a different way. So this is a very much market-based incentive. So if you're not familiar with our label, it's a blue label with a little white outline of a fish that also looks like a tick mark. So in the U.S., some products you might see this on, if you're going to your local supermarket right now, look at cans of tuna. If you were to look at that kind of fake crab product, oftentimes that has a lot of pollock, which is certified. We have a number of pollock fisheries certified, so that will be on there. You can also find us. We have worked with Whole Foods. I think we actually just recently had a 20-year anniversary of them being involved with MSC, so they will do a lot of actually fresh fish, even including some local ones like Oregon pink shrimp you can find fresh at their fish counters.
So what's your role and what's your background that led you into this position and interest in the first place?
Yeah, so I guess I'll first just quickly explain my role. So I'm a fisheries assessment manager, so I work on what we call our science and standards team. So what that means is part of it is kind of administrative. So I help fisheries, mainly the assessors that are applying our standard and certifying fisheries with any type of technical questions that they might have on the standard and the process requirements around being certified. And then the other half of my job is actually then doing the policy development work for the standard. So I have several projects that I oversee and then go through the whole consultation and policy development process.
Has fisheries in general been a focus area of yours?
Yeah. So I did my undergrad actually in conservation biology and then did some kind of side studies on limnology and fisheries. And then I did my master's in fisheries and aquatic science. And then I had started a PhD also on fisheries and aquatic science. And I've always been working in some way with fisheries since graduating.
Oh, okay. My first question about the MSC program is, does it only certify wild stock, or do you work with aquaculture type operations and products as well?
So we are wild stock, and we have a sister organization called the Aquaculture Stewardship Council that does aquaculture products, but we do have this area, the in-between, if you will, that we call enhanced. So we will certify, you know, mussel ropes, bivalves. We have salmon as well that kind of fall into this area where there's still a connection to the wild stock, so it's not full aquaculture. So we do dabble a little bit, but if it's full aquaculture, it'll be with ASC.
Are there any ASC products here in Washington?
There are. So Taylor Shellfish, I know, has been ASC certified. And I think that was one of the first for the U.S. I'll have to double check that. But yeah, that was pretty cool to see.
So what in Washington State, what fisheries do you or your colleagues work with here?
Yeah, so right now in Washington State, we are actually... Washington is part of the Oregon pink shrimp. It's Oregon and Washington pink shrimp. So they did a scope extension to get added to the certificate that Oregon had started. And then we also have a large U.S. West Coast groundfish that goes along the U.S. West Coast. So there's Washington Fishers, as well as recently the macaw are now part of that certificate as well. And then other than that, there are some fisheries that might be coming in through the pipeline that may be looking to get certified. So I have some colleagues that work more in the outreach of kind of working with clients to let them know the benefits of the program, kind of getting their heads around what they'll need to do for assessment, where any areas for improvements are needed before they enter. So there might be some more fisheries interested that maybe in a few years' time we'll see.
So your colleagues and yourself are based out of Seattle. You have a Seattle office?
Yeah, so we have a Seattle office. So mainly everyone in that office does U.S.-focused work. So the outreach, whether it's commercial and fisheries, the marketing is all U.S. And then myself and a few others are on what we call the global team. So I dabble in U.S. fisheries, but I also have fisheries in my portfolio that are Western Baltic fisheries. I have a Western Australian octopus fishery. So we work more in the global context.
Hmm. Can you talk about what you were doing in Morocco specifically?
Yeah, so I'd call it more capacity building. So before entering into the MSC space of getting certified, some fisheries need to do improvements to get to a level where they can kind of confidently enter, if you will. And so these are fisheries that might be in fishery improvement plans. So there had been there is a sardine fishery that is working on that. It's called a FIP. And so they had come up against our requirements for kelotrophic level fisheries. So these are mainly small pelagics that play a key role in their ecosystem. And so they were trying to get their head around different ways of applying our requirements. So we went there with the intent of trying to really increase understanding of those requirements on the ground, but also learn from them in the application of the requirements, because the standard itself isn't static. We do reviews of it every 5 years. So to get actual on the ground insight to how it's being applied, what barriers might be faced, was super helpful. So it was a teaching and a learning type of workshop.
I understand you're going to be going to Peru at the end of August. What are you going to be doing there?
Yeah, so I'll be doing something similar. Recently, more questions have been popping up on our kelotrophic level requirements. So again, it's another time to really reach out to stakeholders that are an important part of our process. And so it's, again, trying to teach more about what our requirements are. I think a lot of people see them as kind of scary sometimes. We have certain percentages outlined of what needs to be met. So it's trying just to improve the understanding of the requirements. But then again, also see what concerns do stakeholders have? Are there any considerations that we should bring into our current fishery standard review in light of this project? So it's, again, another kind of learning, teaching, and kind of discussing type of workshop with stakeholders.
So the review process, that's interesting to me. So do you have outside third-party reviewers to help you with that process? And if so, who are they?
Well, I'll take a step back. So with the fishery standard, we write and maintain the standard, and then assessments are conducted by third-party organizations. And so with the policy work that we do, we have policy and project leads that work on these projects. And this is what's happening with the fishery standard review. We review these projects every 5 years. We take note of any issues that have been raised internally or externally with the application. There might be projects that reflect kind of stakeholder concerns. So we don't necessarily have a third party reviewing it. It's us reviewing it. But public consultation is a huge part of this. So that's where that stakeholder engagement, understanding, you know, does this make sense to them? How do they want to be engaged? What concerns might they have? And so we try to engage a range of stakeholders in our review process. So that way we get industry insight, we get environmental NGO insight, we might get management insight. So that way when we do the review, it's really kind of encompassing and really kind of trying to get at, you know, we can't be something that pleases everyone, but really understanding what the concerns are and trying to address it as best we can.
That must be really complex in light of the fact that you have over 300 fisheries globally that you certify, and out of those fisheries, it comes to like 20,000 plus species of creatures.
Yeah, so we have over 330 fisheries currently certified. We range from small scale to, you know, really large fisheries. We have quite a far global reach, so yeah, we're quite a far spreading standard, if you will.
So, if you're just joining us, this is KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and I'm Aaron Barnett, host of Coastal Cafe, and today I'm speaking with Pippa Kahn from the Marine Stewardship Council talking about fisheries certification. You'll find some of these products even at the Safeway here in Port Townsend. I've purchased them myself, the little blue label with the fish. Thank you. So are some fisheries more difficult than others to certify? And if so, what do you think is some of the reasons that that is to be?
Yeah, so our standard is we have our default standard, and then we have modifications for enhanced bivalve salmon and introduced fisheries, introduced species. So it can be difficult for different reasons. It might be difficult because the assessment has a lot of units of certification, so it's actually going to be certified. So maybe it has like 10 target species. So, you know, maybe the logistics of going through and getting the stock assessment information, what have you, for all those fisheries can be difficult. For some, it might be that they're the first mover for that species. So, for example, maybe it's the, you know, maybe it was the first octopus or the first squid fishery. And so understanding if the standard is suitable or applicable for this fishery, it might be a concern. But what it comes down to is just really kind of making sure that the fishery is indeed itself, you know, sound. And then also, it's kind of just going for it, because, you know, I feel like every fishery at some point there's, you know, different areas that they might need to work on for improvements. No fishery is perfect. And that's the thing too, is that we welcome improvements and we want to see that change on the water. So yeah, I think it's just coming down to also understanding of our requirements. Our materials aren't the easiest to get through if you look at our certification requirements and the standard itself. So sometimes I think it's just reassuring people that it's not daunting. It is possible, and taking it step by step.
Do any of your certifications and processes encounter pushback?
Oh, yeah. So we're kind of in this interesting space. So, you know, there might be an issue that maybe industry feels one way versus maybe an ENGO. So sometimes we're caught in the middle. You know, maybe one group wants to see us go one way on a requirement, whereas a group wants to see us go another way. So we do get a lot of pushback, and we have to strive to maintain not only that neutrality, but doing what's right. So what is actually sustainable, and making sure that our intent is met.
So could you give me an example of what one of those requirements may look like?
Yeah. So right now there's, I guess it's more of a requirement and it's a subject. It's actually defining what's being assessed, the unit of assessment. And so this is something that came up because some practices were going through and being certified while others weren't. So it kicked off this large practice to make sure that what we wanted to assess was actually captured and we were maintaining that intent of sustainability. So we had, you know, kind of that push and pull, and we've had to, you know, go back to the drawing board numerous times on this one to get to something that we felt was the right way of tackling this kind of problem that came through from stakeholder input. So the requirement itself kind of outlines the actual details of what will be assessed. So like the target species, the geographic area, the fishing gear or practice being used, that type of thing. So our requirements can range from everything from the scope of what's being assessed, how to do the assessment through them, to what's covered in the standard, which is actually the types of levels or requirements that the fishery itself has to meet to be shown to be sustainable.
I was going through some of the literature, and I noticed there was mention of ghost fishing or derelict mm-hmm. fishing gear removal. How does that figure into what you do and in the bigger picture?
Yeah, so that's a really great example of one of these kind of issues that has come up through stakeholder concerns and feedback into MSC, and us also, you know, showing that benefit of stakeholder interest in this. And so we have a whole project that's currently under our fishery standard review that's looking at ghost gear and whether that's something that is currently covered in the standard. And if it is it something that maybe just needs to be modified to better relay the intent, or do we need to actually pursue adding in like requirements that explicitly outline what we expect with regards to ghost gear? Because ultimately, there's only so far that we can go sometimes with the standards. So sometimes people want us to tackle large issues like climate change, but we kind of have to realistically stay within our bounds. We're certifying the fishery and its practices as sustainable, but ghost gear is certainly one, because within our principle two of the standard, we look at ecosystem impacts on kind of bycatch and retained species, endangered species. So ghost gear would figure into all those things.
And I understand that stock predictions and stock assessments figure into the overall equation in the certification process. Could you talk about how stock assessments figure in?
Yeah, so within principle one of our standard, and I should back up and say that our standard has three principles. The first relates to stock status. The second is kind of the environment and ecosystem. And the third is looking at effective management in the system. So when we look at stock predictions, that would come in under principle one. So first, we'd want to look at the actual fishery itself on that target species and see if it's actually being maintained around MSY, maximum sustainable yield. It's not going below the point where recruitment would be impaired. And part of that is actually having that stock assessment. So we have a whole performance indicator, which is kind of like a subpart of P1 that actually looks at the stock assessment, whether it's appropriate for the species type. And then when we look at certain other aspects, we look at current levels of exploitation in the fishery to justify certain scores. But another aspect is harvest strategies and HCRs. And so within that too, we talked about management strategy evaluation. So that's some of the probabilistic ways of looking at the stock and looking at the different ways that different management may impact. So it is all encompassing. Reference points are also included in under the stock assessment performance indicator.
Well, that piques my curiosity on Antarctic fisheries. So how, in an area such as the Antarctic, which is not really managed by any particular one nation, I think is a consortium, I would assume, how do those certifications play out in a place like that?
Well, some of the fisheries will come from certain countries. So we have like toothfish, for example, and that's a certain country and client that came through. We also have some krill fisheries. So there is CAMLAR, which, oh gosh, I can't even remember what it stands for, but it's basically, it oversees the Antarctic resources. And so in a sense, that's kind of like a RFMO, a regional fisheries management organization. So there is a framework for that. And so krill, you know, the management, the advice comes from CAMLAR. So yeah, it might either be a specific country, or it might be like krill where then they fall upon CAMLAR.
This may seem like kind of a dumb question, but other than whales, who eats krill, or what do they use it for?
So there's actually a growing area for supplements, biopharmaceuticals. Mm-hmm. And so krill, like some reduction fisheries like menhaden and things like that, it's supplements.
So in addition to vitamins, if somebody wants pink skin like a flamingo, they can eat krill?
They can give it a try.
All right.
Can't make any promises.
Cheap rouge. Okay. So now, is there anything I haven't brought up that you'd like to talk about that is a kind of a pressing issue that you're dealing with these days? I mean, the problem with these radio shows and questions is that there's sort of a canned element to it. So I'm going to give you the opportunity to talk about something that you're doing that you're excited about.
Yeah.
And okay. I think people would like to hear.
Yeah. So I guess as part of that fishery standard review that I'm talking about, I have 5 projects currently. And so I'm working on our kilotrophic level requirements, reviewing those, making sure that we're maintaining intent, still up to date with best practice. But that's been pretty exciting because each time we do a standard review, maybe things will change, maybe they won't. But when we went from our previous version to this new version, we pulled out as a separate scoring table the requirements for these fisheries. And so as more fisheries get on this new standard and are assessed against it, more questions are coming up. And so I find this one really interesting because small pelagics, we have fisheries globally for them. A lot of them are highly fluctuating. They're environmentally driven. So just from an interest level wise, I find them really interesting because right now in Europe for ICES, so International Council on the Exploration of the Seas, they've been having some you know, issues with some of these small pelagics, stock advice has changed, or maybe the stock itself has fallen below the biomass limit. So it's, that's one I always like to talk about, because they're just such fascinating fisheries to watch in real time, and they really highlight that management needs to be adaptive. And so it's just interesting to see kind of the global variation in how these fisheries are managed and some of the ingenuity and adaptivity that comes out of them.
Yeah. Do any specific fisheries come to mind?
Well, actually, it's not necessarily a kilotrophic level one, but I think the Oregon pink shrimp is a really neat fishery. They did some really novel work to look at how best to look at managing that stock with regards to reference points and the role of the environment. So they had a whole bunch of work that went into that to find, you know, what environmental indicators, and it has something to do with tidal height. And then they were concerned about Ulacan bycatch, and so they did, again, a whole bunch of research, and now they use LED lights in a manner that's like significantly reduced bycatch. And so, again, it's just that ingenuity in that fishery and like the work that went into it. It was really neat to see, and you know, it's had really great impacts, and it's a really cool case study.
Was that something that Oregon State University did?
It was mainly through the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Group. They have a research group. Yeah.
So when somebody buys a can of tuna at Safeway or Aldrich's in Uptown, and that blue label's on it, what are the standards that's behind that label that, you know, in layman's terms, encapsulate that concept?
So our standard is comprised of three principles. The first looks at actually sustainability of the stock, so what's being fished. The second principle encompasses looking at the impacts of the fishery on the environment, on kind of bycatch retained species, endangered, threatened, protected species, and habitats in the ecosystem. And then our third principle actually focuses on the management in place in the fishery and making sure that's effective. So when you see the stamp, it means that fishery has passed the standard. We score on 60, 80, 100. So it's, you know, there might be a few areas where maybe there's conditions, areas for them to improve, but they've shown that they've met the basic requirements of being sustainable among those three principles. So it's not like you can just meet one and then the other two can fall behind. It's all three principles. And also, I think something that's really important to highlight with our standard is it's not a once you're certified, like that's it, you're done. So it's a 5-year certificate. And then every year, 6 months either side of the anniversary date of when they get their certificate, they're required to have a surveillance audit. So that's to review information, see if there needs to be a change in scoring. So maybe the stock status has changed, or maybe some work has been done on research into, you know, maybe an endangered species. And so it's not just a you're certified and forget about it. It's a certified, but you need to show that you're maintaining it. And if you have conditions on the fishery or making improvements.
Well, great. Well, I'd like to thank you for coming in, Pippa. This is Aaron Barnett, host of Coastal Cafe, which is a joint production of the University of Washington Sea Grant Program and KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, Washington. I'd like to thank our program manager, Larry Stein, and our production engineer, Jared Dufresne. I would also like to give a shout-out to the Native American Indian band Ku'ik for providing the opening and closing music for this show. Please remember, our oceans are a precious resource that all of us can work together to preserve for all generations. Have a great day, and again, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thanks, Aaron.